Blog Talk Radio.
Well, son, I tell you, life for me ain't been no crystal stair. It's had tacks in it and splinters, and boards torn up, and places with no carpet on the floor, bare. But all the time, I's been a-climbing on, and reaching ladders, and turning corners, sometimes going in the dark where there ain't been no light. So boy, don't you turn back. Don't you set on the steps, 'cause you find it's kinda hard. Don't you fall now, for I still going, honey. I still climbing, and life for me ain't been no crystal stair.
We're grateful that you can join us again for another very instructive and meaningful dialogue. The topic tonight is beating the odds, the blueprint for rearing a successful African-American male. Commonly when a success story is told of a African-American male, it is shared in the backdrops of a rough and often dangerous lifestyle or past. Drugs, weapons, gangs, and violence are often the basis of the triumph. Seldom, though, do we hear the narrative about wholesome examples of a healthy home environment and the love presence of a father. Tonight we will be talking with our special guest, who is a financial service representative at a firm out of Chicago, Mr. Gerald Bloodsall. And he'll engage us in most riveting conversation. And we will answer the question, is it true, is it possible to raise a well-rounded, successful African-American male in today's toxic social environment? Again, in just a little bit, we will bring him on. But as we ordinarily do, I'm going to open up with our monologue here. And the purpose of that is to give some context for the conversation that we have on the show and allow you, the listening audience and participants, to understand from which we are coming. And we invite you to share as well. You can call us on our call-in line, our guest line, which is 657-383-0944. Again, that's 657-383-0944. Won't you please call and join us in our conversation? But again, as mentioned earlier, we're going to begin with our monologue. I want to begin with the story of a young eagle. That was a baby eagle who had strong, extensive, and robust wings. His travels were limited, however. All he knew was how to walk around on the ground. After hearing a strong voice speak into his ear and say, "Young eagle, do you know who you are? You're incredibly strong, capable of scooping down at great speed and grabbing prey. Your appearance and might is highly respected in the world. Your sight is very keen, and your intellect unmatched. Once the young eagle realized his greatness, he stretched his wings wide, mounted to the sky, and soared high, looking back only to thank the voice that he realized to be his father, who taught him how to soar. The potential to become a man, even in America today, I want to share with you that just like the bald eagle, males are born with the divine right and the capacity to have dominion in the earth, no matter where they are, be it Chicago, New York, California, wherever they are in the world, they have the ability and the right to have dominion. In fact, the Genesis account says, "Then God said, let us make man in our image, according to our likeness. Let them rule over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the sky, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth." Perhaps when we think about the idea of the presence or fatherhood in a young man's life that will soar him to greatness. Question is, after 400 some years in the American experience as a subgroup of people, what is it then that we look at in terms of the path to fatherhood? I had the privilege to author a workbook which is entitled A Framework for Fatherly Instruction, Understanding the Male Growth Process. There we identify four key stages of male growth. And I want to emphasize that in each of these stages, the common element is the male. At birth, the male child is known because of its masculine features. And we really don't know the difference between it other than certain body parts from a female because they have the same needs, emotionally, physical needs, those basic needs. And they are not conscious of really who they are and the potential they have to become a man at that point, which is why it's important that there be a father to begin being that voice of authority, much like the young eagle had. In the boyhood stage, we write that that is a male of chronological growth, and he has the potential to express either aggressive or assertive behaviors, often driven by naive thought or greenness, not knowing very well. But with the proper voice of authority, he can learn to assert himself appropriately as opposed to aggressively throwing himself on others and causing conflict. The manhood stage of development is a chronologically grown male who demonstrates responsibility for his actions and all that is within his domain. In other words, everything that he's accountable for. This man eventually prepares himself to share what he has mastered and tied down for himself with a woman, and then he enters into fatherhood. A chronologically grown male who has responsibly established himself as a man and, watch this, procreated life in the context of marriage. I'm going to put my preacher head on here. When we think about this, I believe it's important to realize that in this way, we're just like God when we continue the cycle of creation. It is procreating life in the context in marriage that identifies the father, not just because one is able to offer sperm to bring life in the world, but it's the, again, I emphasize that it is a man who has established themselves and who have responsibly procreated life in the context of commitment. This is the basis of a promise that a child, male or female, has. Now, having said that, I want to share with you all a very, very important message I thought was key from a musical artist by the name of Clarence Carter. Now, some of you may know him as being a low-down, dirty, junkyard blues dog. But Clarence Carter said something that I think that was key in 1970 as he did a revision of this song. And just for a second, if you'll lend your ear.
Then one day a strong rain came and washed all the crops away.
In 1970, the blues legend Clarence Carter offered a powerful message to fathers rearing boys to become men.
I was so ragged, folks used to call me Patches. Papa used to tease about it, close deep down inside, he was very gullible.
A father loves his son and wants the best for him, despite the material circumstances.
Education he never had.
The father does not necessarily have to be materially wealthy or highly educated to teach his son about responsibility. Can give his son is the gift of valuing hard work and determination.
Well, I told Mama I was going to quit school, but she said that was Daddy's strictest rule. So every morning before I went to school, I made the chicken, then I chopped one to the sunshine.
You've just heard again from Clarence Carter. He described a boy who had the best gift anyone could have, and that's not necessarily that his father was a rich man, or wealthy materially, but he had some values that he instilled in his son that I want to believe that can carry him the rest of his life, and likewise, we ourselves. Again, the topic is Beating the Odds, the blueprint for rearing a successful African-American male. We are honored to have with us tonight Mr. Gerald Bludsall, who again is a financial service representative out of a firm in Chicago, Illinois, and he is with us tonight. Welcome, Mr. Bludsall.
Good evening. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. We're so happy that you can be with us, and I trust you heard our monologue. Let me give you an opportunity to introduce us as you will. I know you got two fine sons, at least, and beautiful wife. Had the pleasure of meeting the wife and one of the sons. And you just kind of introduce yourself, tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do, and let's go into some dialogue here.
Well, fantastic. First, Dr. Dockery, thank you for the invitation to join your community discussion this evening. I'm very honored to be a part of this, and I commend you for the great work that you have initiated through building families and communities. That's a fantastic initiative. But I am a male who's reached the mature age of 53. And I have been married to my wife for a few years, about 23 now. And we dated for about 7 years before. So she says she counts those years as well. But so I have a good investment. And through the relationship and love that we have, we were blessed with two fine young men in terms of what the gift that God gave us. And so we're just excited to raise a family and have an opportunity to do something great in our community and do something great in terms of raising a family and living the American dream. And, okay. Yes, I'm here in the Chicagoland area, and I've been here since about 22 years, and it's just a great community to raise a family and to do business.
Sure, sure. You know, you heard our monologue. I often engage people, and I hear oftentimes people speak from the idea of their rough past, and I think they mm-hmm. should share their testimony. I believe it's important to share that. But sometimes it's almost as if the thought is you got to do something bad in order to be recognized for something good you do. Help me with that a little bit.
Well, I think your topic is right on. Beating the odds, the American blueprint for raising an African-American male, you are mm-hmm. putting it right in front of our mindset and helping us to focus on what's really important. We can mm-hmm. beat the odds, and sometimes our circumstances, the community we raised in, the economics of the situation, the status or class where we were born, those are factors. But still, as rational beings, when we empower ourselves with knowledge and education and in a good environment, we can beat the odds, and that's what I feel I'm so compelled to be a part of your discussion tonight because, okay. yes, I feel that my wife and I have done exactly as you've mentioned in your monologue.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about, I know, well, let me just say and disclosure, full disclosure here, we met each other as we were dropping, I think, your youngest son off and my son, at Case Western Reserve University there in Cleveland, Ohio.
Yes.
And if I'm not mistaken, your son is majoring in engineering?
Yes, he's majoring in mechanical engineering. Yes, sir.
As well as my son,
Mm-hmm.
And we had a chance to kind of dialogue with one another briefly there, but I thought it was a blessing to know that there are good people who struggle. You know, we read about them, unfortunately, in the news every day. I know you see it too often in Chicago in particular. We get it right here
yes.
in Nashville. Right? But I think it's important for us to underscore the fact that there is a process by which you can guarantee that your young people can avoid certain things. Now, maybe for you and I, we too old, and it's too late for us to avoid the mistakes we've made. But we can break
yes.
that cycle. Tell us a little bit about what are some of the core things or principal things that you and your wife tell as core values as you raise your boys?
Well, I really appreciate that question because the core values really revolve around knowing and having a relationship with God,
okay.
family, and then work. Okay, and those core things are so very important because our lives on a day-by-day basis should, in principle, revolve around those three things. And knowing who is blessing you and guiding you and keeping you, just as the little sparrow is taken care of, we have
right.
the ability to be rational and do for ourselves and act. And so having that relationship is important. Having a relationship with your family is extremely important because we're the ones to nurture and to provide an environment for the love, the warmth, the safety, and the basic needs of life, as far as food, shelter, and clothing. And so that's
right.
important. And then the last of those three principles really is just work. And as I always tell my son that you are a bloodsaw, and the bloodsaw man works. And
all
so
right.
they understand you have time to play, but play comes after work. So those are my principles that we kind of inspire in our children.
That is so very important because in my book, I talk about the potential to be aggressive in your expression or assertive.
Mm-hmm.
The reality is it is natural for a boy to exert energy and a drive.
Absolutely.
But without the right instruction and without the right guidance, it's quite likely that they will find themselves inappropriately engaging or asserting themselves or aggressively overstepping their bounds. I think about Eric Erickson's stages of growth and develop, where he describes that there are certain key points where if a child mimics certain lessons or examples and they are scolded for it, they feel they begin to feel like they're not worth and something is wrong with them. So that's so key that it's important that early on you establish those values for your children.
Absolutely.
In terms of what is the expectation here.
Absolutely.
I'm reminded of a scriptural text that says, train up a child in the way that he should go. Now, I noticed it didn't say, Mr. Bloodsaw, in a way, in some way.
Yes.
But it was very specific. It said the way. And I asked myself
in the
question, what is that way? What is that way?
Yes.
And I appreciate what you're saying is, as a parent, you identified what it was that they needed and how it was that you can shape, basically, and nurture their best qualities to be productive. So tell me, what made your sons decide on the career profession that they are embarking upon?
Well, before I go in there, I want to comment on something you just said, and that was you used the word best. And a part of my values are to teach my children, and now young men, to be their best daily.
All right.
And to strive for being the best in their activities in their life. So being the best or being their best may mean they may get an A or B on in a class and do very well, but there may be someone that comes right after them that actually got the highest score, which is the best. But they could be one and the same person, and I want them to understand the difference between the levels of success. You still can be successful by being your best.
Okay.
And it's that strive that's really important.
Wow. You know, that is really key. Sometimes people think you're supposed to always dominate everybody.
Right.
And what I'm hearing you say is just because you didn't keep up with someone else does not mean you haven't put forth your best effort.
Absolutely.
So you don't have to compete with other folks. Is that what you're saying?
That you're competing with yourself to do those core principle values, and that's very important. And the other part of this, and you kind of allude to this as well, when you talk about teaching them the way, well, a part of my values and our values with my wife and I was in April of 2005, I wrote a little note and I posted inside the cabinet walls where our keys are. And so every time you open that door to grab your keys, you see this note. And knowing that I was coming on the your talk show today with you, I was reminded to go look at and visit what I put up there. And one of the things that I put up was the number one thing was about being the best and being your best. But the second thing that my responsibility was to love my children and to tell them that I love them. And that was something that was very important, because for them to know that they are loved in spite of all the other things out there is an assurance, is a confirmation. It allows them to identify that their male parent, their dad, is openly expressing to them their love for who they are. And so that was very important.
Brother Bloodsaw, don't that make you a chump? Don't that make him a chump to have a man tell them they love you?
Well, I'm a Bloodsaw man, and we work, and we love.
All right. All right.
And we respect family. Right. And so they understand the power of that and about being a Bloodsaw man. So, and then the next thing that I put on there was for my responsibility to them was setting rules and limits to guide, and I had the word my, but into you, I said their personal and positive development. So I had to set the rules. I had to set the limit. They knew that I was setting limits and rules for them on a day-by-day basis. So when you're of age and had to be home at 11:30 and you're the first person to leave the social gathering, and they always were concerned about having to be the first one to leave, and then leaving at 11:30. That was a concern. because I shared with them early that that was my responsibility. It was not about being their friend. It was about being their parent.
Wow.
In a way that I guided their personal and their positive development. And so those are some core things that I put in place to kind of help them understand why Dad was doing the things that Dad was doing or saying the things that Dad was saying, so that they would not always push back and they would just learn to accept authority, accept respect authority, accept and respect parenting from their father.
Right, right. So I'm hearing two things now. Love for yourself and family,
mm-hmm.
and knowing that you are guided by some sort of standard for yourself. Is that... I'm trying to wrap my mind around it now, because this is you're kind of blowing my mind right now, Brother Bloodsall. But that's powerful, because I think about growing up in Chicago myself and
mm-hmm.
the role that the gangs played for young men who were fatherless. They promised to them that if you hang with us, we'll
mm-hmm.
guarantee you security. We'll
mm-hmm.
look out for whatever you need. If we got to rob
mm-hmm.
somebody, we'll feed you. We'll give you some place to lay your head. And you ain't got to worry about nothing. Excuse my broken
mm-hmm.
English. But that's the promise or what the gang suggested. And I think about how they began in the late 60s, 70s. It was really out of a response to the social economic despair that they were facing. In poverty.
I would assume that's true.
In poverty-free cities, you know. But what I'm hearing you say is that this is one of the core roles of a father, to provide that type of security and instruction for their sons. Therefore, there's a
Absolutely.
Need for them to go and try to align themselves with any other.
That's right. And that positive development and knowing that you are helping them understand life from a positive perspective and that they are to develop.
Right.
Those things are very important to me, but they had to understand that this is what I'm doing. So that was my role. That is my role. Even to this day, as a parent of you know, young men now, I have to still
right.
guide, you know, their positive development, their thoughts, so that what goes in to them is eventually going to come out, because the substance of what they are made of are of positive things that help them think critically.
Right, right. Now, this sounds like it's taking a lot of time. I know you got to feed the family and put clothes on them, keep a roof over. I mean, what do you have time for all this? I mean, don't they understand you got to work?
Well, that's a part of who we are. And when you work, you let them work with you. You teach them the principles of work, and you teach them what a person has to do when you're getting up at 6 o'clock in the morning and preparing breakfast, and then you're going out to your job. And there are often opportunities for them to go on the weekends and go with you, and
mm-hmm.
they have to sit and watch you talk to a client. And so they know this is what my dad has to do for us to have the home that we live in out in the suburbs,
wow.
To have the cars in the driveway that they have access to, not one car, but two cars, or three cars, or four cars. So when you work, the results of the work are the fruits of the harvest, the fruits of the work. And so they see the work going in. Sometimes they see Dad just sweeping the driveway with a broom. That's work.
Right.
It has to be done.
Right.
And so you're teaching them
that.
You're showing them the way.
Right, right. And that's their presence. That's that ever
being present,
right?
Yes, yes.
You know, and I like that, because sometimes, Brother Bloodsall, the social or the cultural definition of what it means to be a man seems to include for many that you don't really show too many emotions, and you don't come off as being a weak or you understand what I'm saying. You know,
yes.
So you got to teach your boys that they can be rugged and don't let too many people get too close to them. But what I'm hearing you say is you provide a platform for them to learn how to not only love themselves, but I'm sure they saw your affection towards your wife and learn how to properly engage their mother. I know my son, you know, he got to be a certain age and he got a little bass in his voice.
Yes.
Hey, son, you're going to have to tone your voice down because you're getting a little bass now. And when you talk to your mama, you don't want to come off the wrong way.
So, right.
Those are very important lessons.
Well, you have to include them in things. And by including them, you have to also not just say, just because I said so, but you show them why these things are important. And so showing the affection towards your mother and showing outwardly when you provide various things is very important, and so they can understand that. When I was a young man and proposed to my wife, I bought the very best diamond that was under 1 carat that I could for my wife, right? And so here, some few years later, when they were of age and we had been married for some significant years, my wife was kind of desirous of a larger stone, may I say, much like other ladies. And so eventually I had the good fortune of running to a great jeweler, and he showed me this wonderful stone, and I went ahead and put a deposit on it, and I paid for about 8 or 9 months, just going and pay on it and pay on it and pay on it. But eventually it was time to go pick up the diamond, and so I took her ring to get it fixed, so she was thinking, and I took the boys with me, and so I counted out 10 $100 bills for each one of them, and when we went to go pay the man, I said, count these 10 $100 bills. The first son, Nathaniel, was the oldest, and the second son, Blake, is the baby boy. I each had them each count out that and said, Dad, this is a lot of money. We've never seen this much money. I said, yeah, but this is just a payment. But they understood why, because I involved them in the process of paying for her ring that was, because we'd been married for a long time, but it was showing them their love for their mother. And then the financial aspect of here's what it takes to show your love in a monetary way, and here's the business side of it. And so I wanted them to see the business side of it, handling money, counting it out, looking the man in the eye and said, okay, now that I paid you this money, show me my receipt, provide the receipt to me. And we didn't get the ring that day, but we got a receipt, and we were closer to a number. So I share that, Reverend Dockery, to let you know that you have to include them in all aspects of your life, the good and then the bad, so that they can understand it's not all sugar-coated, but with hard work, smart work, and planning, you can accomplish your goals and showing the affection to those people you love the most, your family. In this case, we use my wife as the example.
Sure. You know, I've done a few workshops in various places and engaged some parents and specifically, I was in Columbus, Mississippi, a little small town. I think it's about 27,000 people, predominantly black. They call it the Chocolate City of Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the ladies said to me, respectfully so, she says, well, you know, everybody don't raise their children the same. And the things you're talking about, they sound good, but, you know, everybody can't do that. I asked her, ma'am, have you ever heard of these things? She said, well, you know, my daddy, he did certain things, but I hadn't heard it said. And I said to her, the object here is not to make yourself feel as though you're less than anyone else who knew about these things, but to provide a framework for culturally ensuring that all of our young men have the value-based instruction necessary for them to become the most productive citizens they can in America, wherever they are, wherever their launching pad is. Let's take a brief intermission here. And on the other side of that, I have a question that I want to pose to you, our next question for the evening. And I want you to kind of speak to that. How much of a need do you see as a father having raised 2 sons for there to be focused teaching about
the presence of a father or father figure in a growing male's life. On the other side of this announcement, let's address that.
Absolutely.
Hey, they call me Poop. I'm from these streets. Somehow, I live to see my 18th birthday. I managed to graduate from juvenile detention to adult prison. People try to tell me I should grow up being a man, but I'm the best man I know. Somebody asked, where I see myself 10 years. Man, I'm just trying to survive these streets day by day.
BFC Institute needs your help to reach the Pookies across America. Please support our traveling educational lecture series addressing perceived threats to African American males. To learn more, please visit us at bfcinstitute.com. That is bfcinstitute.com. Simply click the red sticker for details.
Our very special guest tonight, Mr. Gerald Bledsoe out of Chicago, Illinois. We're grateful again that you may tune in with us either on social media or listening live. Perhaps you archive the show after we finish tonight, but we would love to hear your comments or questions, entertain your questions. You can call us right now at 657-383-0944. Again, that number is 657-383-0944. We would love to entertain your question or comments. Again, we're on with Mr. Gerald Bledsoe, and he is a father who has been blessed to raise two sons. One, I understand, is a studying pilot, airline pilot, and the other one, a mechanical engineer. And so we're grateful for the lessons that he can bring. And I know that this brother don't come puffed up. He doesn't come trying to position himself above anyone else, but he's simply sharing some things that he know that can work and ways that we can love our young people, because we got a lot of young brothers out there right now who are lost, and they need somebody to come and give them some real love. And it's not about throwing money at them all the time as it is about giving them right instruction. So, Mr. Bledsoe, again, thank you for being here with us, sir.
Thank you.
I want you to, if you will, to address this next question. How much do you think there is a need? And I want to emphasize this word. I can't emphasize enough for focused teaching. I've often said that we need to get men together, right? But if you can get 100 of us together and we can stay there for 10 hours, and go nowhere for a whole 10 hours if we're not focused on what we're there for. So in that context, talk to me about the need for focused teaching on a father or a surrogate, a father figure in the life of a grown male?
Well, that is a fantastic question to have some dialogue on, simply because it includes kind of three things that I think are extremely important, specifically for our African American young males, but it applies to all. And it's education, knowledge, and the last part of it is study. And so as we read, as we read to our children, as we share with them ideas, stories, whether it be from the Bible, whether it be from a book that's fiction or nonfiction, and then the whole idea of studying, what does this mean? What is the message behind what you're reading?
Okay.
Those three
okay.
things are so important. So this need for focus is you have to teach, and you have to have a grounds for teaching. Young people have so many different styles of receiving information or knowledge. And so you have to provide it in a way that is right where they are. And the delivery of that is, you know, something I've always felt was very important as my role as a parent, to be involved. And so, you know, for a group of men to come together and stay focused, I think it's very important for us to understand these core things as far as the education, knowledge, and study, and how do we incorporate that and motivate young people to do that. And that's what I focused on with my young men.
Yeah. You know, I often tell myself as I go to share my concepts with others that I want to make sure that my ego is not in the way of the opportunity to impart wisdom and knowledge and understanding. And that's one of the precursors, I believe, to us being successful at doing anything together as a subgroup of men. Now, I, you know, have many Caucasian friends and even Asian friends and Hispanic. So I'm certainly not saying that they don't need to focus on the same thing, but having
sure.
grown up in my experience as an African-American male all my life, some things I found to be, certain truths to be self-evident.
Absolutely.
I do believe that all men are created equal, but if we would follow the rest of the framers' language, they went on to say that men must govern themselves, establish government among themselves, and give consent to the manner in which they come together, their rule, and, you know, they are bonded together. So vitally
mm-hmm.
important. And I find that sometimes the best way for young men to get exposed to that type of camaraderie is in sports, on a basketball team, a baseball team, a football team. They know what the expectation is, and that's to learn how to
mm-hmm.
master the game, right? But in
yes.
the game of life, how often do we lay out the rules such that no matter where they go or who they interact with, they know what the rules are, and that greatly increases their chance of winning the game? How well do we do that?
Well, that's a part of going back to the core things of just education, knowledge, and study. And so to play the game, you have to keep the score. And because that's the only way you know that you're going to achieve, you know, and the success that you're seeking, if it's the goal is to win the game. So you have to know the rules so that when you're scoring and achieving whatever that objective is, if there are four or five parts to get the points that you need to know what each of those four or five parts are. And so that you can
right.
maximize and do your best, quote unquote, in each segment. And
mm-hmm.
sometimes you do that in one game, but sometimes you do that over a period of time. And so you have to
right.
teach your young people that everything is not done in one setting all the time. It's strategic
wow.
and being very strategic so that as you understand applying the rules, you can maximize what you're trying to do. And so I did that in everything. Cutting up my line. The rules are I want the tires to overlap so that there will be no pieces that are sticking up because you didn't. So you have to overlap so that you can cut the grass entirely. And so
right.
that's a rule that I set in place, and it's an expectation, so that now when they cut the line, it looks exactly like Dad would do it because they know what Dad's expectations are. That's knowing the rules of the game and passing that knowledge on. And so if we're going to govern ourselves, as you were talking about, Dr. Ruby, Dockery, that's very, very important, knowing the rules, so that when you're self-governing, you can be in line with what the expectations are, although no one there is giving you oversight. They know what the expectations are, and they work towards that.
Absolutely. We have a caller from 615. Good evening, caller. Welcome to the discussion. You on Talk Straight. Caller, can you hear us? Okay, well, we got him in queue here. Feel free to join in, callers, when you hear us there. You're on Talk Straight. We have Mr. Gerald Bledsoe here, who is our special guest tonight. So you were just talking about something that's key, and I like the way you framed that. You know, you demonstrated to them what the expectation of perfection was, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what the outcome was expected to be. Some people might say you're being too tedious and you're being too hard on them. You're being too rough. Is that a cop-out?
Absolutely, that's a cop-out.
I mean, you know, I'm thinking about African tradition where they raise their young boys to be men as early as 13 years old. They send them through a ritual process. Some would argue, well, they can't do that. You're putting too much on them. Let me Carl, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. How you doing, Pastor?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm all right, man.
This is our very good friend, Pastor Ricky Waller. And let me, if I might, just share with you a little bit how this brother's been helping our cause. He has a book out. First of all, let me just back up a little bit, if y'all don't mind, Brother.
Go ahead.
I've been in Nashville now 29 years, and I came here to study. And I went to a community center that was not far from Fisk University, right in the hood, on Joe Johnson Street. And on one corner, there was a barbershop, and they had a group called the Barbershop Boys there. Now, you know, Brother Bledsoe, we grew up with the Vice Lords and with the Disciples and the L. Rookins and that sort of, but they had the Barbershop Boys there. And I heard two things that rung in my ear all the time, every time I go up there. It was this character by the name of Fat Ricky and the Barbershop Boys. I was very curious about who this Fat Ricky cat is, you know what I mean? And I saw some of the Barbershop Boys. But you know, the Lord has a funny way. It was not until two decades later that I was able to meet Fat Ricky, but it wasn't in that state as the one that was tearing up his community, his neighborhood, but a man who found God and who made it his business to go back and clean up what he messed up. Let me introduce you to my brother, my good friend and brother, Pastor Ricky Waller, the author of a very powerful book who he's sharing some of his income with us to support our traveling series, Steel High. Pastor Waller, say hello to my guest.
God bless you, brother. How you doing? Is it Brother Bessel?
Pastor Waller, thank you very much for calling in. Yes, sir.
Yes, man. I tell you, brother, I got a call about 30 minutes before the broadcast was going to come on. They had me on the funeral without me knowing. And when I got the call, I had to make the move to get over here. And I remember my sister telling me to calm down. So I was letting them know I have to go back to what I was doing, getting ready to get on the broadcast. I made it in time to get to the funeral to do what I was asked to do. And on my way down from the pulpit, I knocked over something, the chart that they had where they had pictures on it and everything. And
my goodness.
But look, the joy of it is that it didn't take away from what I came there to do. And it was just amazing. My sister already told me, but you calm down, you know, because I was thinking they already put me on the program without me knowing. And it happens sometimes. So I knew the guy, I knew the person and everything. So I got over there. It's kind of funny, man, that I was able to get lead back out. So that's when I get on the broadcast. I had to go do Words of Comfort and then get back to the broadcast.
Well, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, because I was told, you know, getting ready to hear Mighty Man, so I wanted to make sure I got to the broadcast as fast as I could.
Well, thank you.
God bless you, man.
Brother Bledsoe shared with me something, Pastor Waller, that my head is still spinning. He suggested that young boys need to learn at an early age the value of love for self and family. And how to discipline themselves to a certain standard. Will you parlay that to what you experienced growing up in Nashville and your experiences as a young man? This is a star athlete here, Brother Bledsoe. A former athlete who did well and by all measures should have went to the pros. But the streak stopped him. Can you parlay that with us for Pastor just for a second?
I can. That's right down. I was sitting on the porch at a young age. Yes, okay. I was sitting on the porch at a young age, watching cars go by, watching the people go by. I'm sitting on the very corner. And so my book, the first chapter is called On the Corner, because that's where I saw a lot of things happening at.
Okay.
And saw a lot of brothers styling and profiling on the corner, you know, and I'm a little kid in the yard playing with the basketball.
Uh-huh.
My attention span stayed right there on the corner because it seemed like they had an excitement. It seemed like they were enjoying themselves. And to make a long story short, the very thing I saw them doing, I started to do. And I wrote about in my book, you got to watch what you do in front of people. Because you don't know who's watching you. And I became the very thing that I saw. I started to stand on the corner, styling and profiling. Next thing I know, I got heroin in my hand. And I became a supplier. I corrupted my community, not on purpose. We was thinking we was having fun. And this is how it all started when I was a young boy, around 8 years old. And I had a basketball, and I could twirl it. I mean, I just enjoyed playing with the ball by myself. And I became a great basketball player. But not to mention, playing with it by myself was just, I mean, man, I didn't have to have anybody to see it or nothing. It was just me and the basketball had a thing going on. And wasn't able to pursue it as a result of getting captured. I think starting at a young age has a lot to do with instilling something that's valuable, as what he's talking about, that won't cause one to, I would say, stray from it.
Right.
That's what happened. I mean, the street life and the attraction was so strong that it superseded what I actually had in my heart. I mean, I've shown Pastor Dockery a lot of moves that I make with the basketball by myself. And I just enjoy the ball, man. You would have never thought that I would have gotten captured like that. You know, like, hey, I still have the ball in my hand, but I'm captured with the basketball still in my hand. Amen. So, yes, I think that's great. I would love to finish hearing about that, man. That's what we need to do. We need to get to these kids while they're yet young and give them that foundation that's built and based
absolutely
on not being able to be shaken. Not being
absolutely
able to be shaken. That's the type of foundation they deserve.
Yes, right. Yes.
Yeah.
And that leads me to my next question I wanted to ask guests. But Bledsoe, suppose you got a fellow that's 30 years old. He's already been incarcerated for at least 3 to 5 years under felony bid.
Right.
He got that monkey on his back, that felony charge, and feels hopeless. Is there any hope that this instruction that you shared with us tonight can help enlighten this brother to reform himself?
Absolutely. Well, a hope is based off of your actions. And the what's so important about this is when we seek out knowledge, when we seek out wisdom, there are enough individuals, just like Pastor Waller, who have been in the system, who have now been successful, and we need to tap into the vine and feed off of that vine that can nurture us. And so your hope It's going to be based off of getting the right sources to nourish through you and nourish you. And so you take that principle and reach out to someone as a young 30-year-old who's made some mistakes and said, how can I get past my history so that I can live the next 70 years of my life and doing God's work or doing work to support my family, doing work to improve my community? How can I take the next 70 years? And so it's very important to know that you can only change the future and influence the future. You cannot change the past. And so you have to focus on those core things of getting guidance and getting the right nurturing, the right ingredients from that standpoint. You know, oftentimes they talk about in the Bible, they talk about the potter and the clay. And sometimes the clay won't stand up on his own. Well, the potter knows that. The potter knows that you have to put some different ingredients in it to strengthen and reinforce that. And then all of a sudden it begins taking shape. And sometimes an additional ingredient needs to be added. Not too much, just the right amount.
Not too much.
I believe I didn't know you were preaching too, Brother Bloodsaw.
No.
All right. Yeah.
Yeah, I believe that might preach right there, brother. But yeah, I mean, you know, and again, it's so important that we strike the balance. I find, gentlemen, that a lot of young men, they value their outward appearance and impressing you with their outward appearance via their clothes, facial expressions, their physical demeanor, as opposed to being comfortable with impressing you with their intelligence, their ability to articulate themselves and to speak toward things on a higher level than just basic things.
Yes.
You know, and having been an educator in the public school system, it always struck me as serious that when there's a culture that will make a young person who want to be intellectual in their expression feel as though they're the odd one out, there's work we got to do within our homes and our communities, and I'll even say within our churches, to change that culture. What do you think about that, Brother Bloodsaw?
Well, what is interesting there is the underlying foundation has to be based on something greater than what the expectations are of people from a marketing image perspective. The images that you see are the byproducts of somebody else's direction. And so you have to carve out your own direction. Do you wear a white shirt and a tie? Do you wear a plaid shirt and blue jeans? Your choice is getting up and putting that white shirt on and that tie. You immediately create an image or perception that's different from the person with the plaid shirt and the blue jeans on and maybe a hoodie. Now, I'm not saying anything negative about a hoodie because Mark Zuckerberg, Mark Zuckerberg from Facebook wears a hoodie.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Occasionally, he'll wear a shirt and tie.
That's
okay. So the hoodie is not the issue. The issue is what image do you want to present and how can you change and influence that image by your actions on a day-by-day basis, and who are the people around you that you want to communicate an image to so that they will think of you as the person with the white shirt and tie on, a businessman, versus the person that's on the corner. Excuse me, Pastor Ricky Water. But on the corner is a different look.
That's
what we have to do in terms of really changing that perception is you know, when we wake up in the morning, what image are we broadcasting and the actions that we do? And then when we speak, are we thinking critically about what's coming out before we speak so that the message that we are saying is going to be the message that we want people to hear and receive?
I've heard people suggest to me, Brother Bloodsaw, that I don't like black people because I share the same principle that you just shared in terms of the power of the first impression that you give people.
Absolutely.
And how seriously do you want them to take you when that with that unique opportunity to make a first impression? Well, you don't like black people because you're talking about they clothes and the, but you that was right on the money, man. That you young people in particular, particularly black males, need to understand that no matter what has happened in America's ugly past and history, today is your opportunity to present the man that you want people to see.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let me just share a little simple story. Let me share just a quick story about that. I went to college. I'm from the state of Michigan originally. I went to college in a small liberal arts college in Michigan, and very well-to-do, very conservative. And I had a football scholarship and a track scholarship. There were about 10 African-American males on the football team. And there were probably about 15 African-Americans on campus. And so 10 out of 15 means a lot of people are playing, you know, athletics. Well, the other ones that were not on football were on basketball. Okay? However, for those people who did not know or have a relationship with a person of color, an African-American, we sat in a class together, but some people never knew or never had a relationship with a person of color, an African-American, because of where they grew up. But at college, where the parents are not there and the environment, the traditional environment is not around you, you get to choose who you interact with or not. So my way of dealing with being a student athlete was on every Monday after the football game or the track meet, I would wear a white shirt and tie to class. I distinguished myself from just being an athlete to being a person of business in school. I began more friends because people looked and identified with me because I was identifying with them because of my outer appearance. My hair was still curly, and some people had never touched an African-American male's hair. But as they got to know me because I had their uniform on, I was received more better. I don't know if that's the right word, because of their assimilation and understanding I was a part of their culture, and so I was assimilating what they expect, and so I became a little bit more like them. But it was not my intention to be like them. It was my intention for them to get to know me. And so I transcended the stereotypes of a student or an athlete to become a student athlete who happened to be African American on a small, predominantly majority campus.
So you didn't lose who you were, though, by doing that.
No,
sir. You didn't lose in the essence of who you were and what your principal values were. That's what I'm hearing.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, I've asked, and I shared this with Pastor Waller, I've asked young men, if you were scooped up, blindfold, tied by your hands and your feet, put into a Cessna airplane, flown over to Okinawa, Japan somewhere, and dropped off in the rice fields, would you be able to survive that experience if they turn you loose and let you free? I got the deer in the headlight look. You know, what I'm hearing you say, Brother Bloodsaw, is when a person knows their identity and their purpose and they know how to adapt themselves to any given circumstance, not losing who they are, they can survive.
Yes, sir.
Is that what I'm hearing you say?
That is exactly what I'm saying. Yes, sir. Right on. They can survive because they have the confidence. And that's a word we haven't used thus far in our conversation. But confidence is something that comes from having a very solid base and understanding who you are and what you have learned because of your knowledge, your education, and your study.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I ran for office, a couple of political office, and I had a few barbershop gatherings with some young guys, and we had some pretty explosive conversations. But that was the one thing I tried to get across to them, and that is that, you know, that was this subtle disdain for formal education and for becoming aware of the political process. And I shared with them that what education does is equip you with knowledge so that you can address your circumstances in an intelligent way. But if you don't know, you're going to make a decision, whether it's informed or ill-informed. You're going to make a decision. You're going to make a choice. And oftentimes the difference between it being detrimental for you or productive is based on your knowledge base. You know,
absolutely.
What do you know, and what do you have in front of you to operate from? So, we got about another 20 minutes here, and there is one last question I want to pose to you, Brother Bloodsaw. But before I do that, Pastor Wall, anything you want to say before we continue on?
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead. I'm gonna stay tuned in, man. I just want to be listening right now. And
okay.
Some
okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we certainly appreciate you. We don't want to overlook your presence here.
Oh yeah.
But first, y'all.
Yes.
Okay. I've asked this question to our other guests in the other cities that we've had to come on so far, and we'll continue to do so as we have our guests from the various cities that we're aiming to go to. The question is simply: how open, in your view, do you see parents, faith-based groups, grassroots leaders of Chicago to embracing research-driven strategies that are, here's my word again, focused on empowering parents and communities to redirect young people from the social ills such as street violence and incarceration and untimely demise?
Chicago is a very interesting place, Dr. Dockery, in that, you know, we have several communities that have their own identification or identity. And so because of our history, we are who we are. We are a city of different personalities, histories, experiences. And I think you have to cater. Just as from the South, you guys know a Piccadilly's restaurant, I imagine.
Oh, yeah.
Well, when you walk in Piccadilly's, I've never seen anyone walk out of Piccadilly's who did not dine in the Piccadilly's. Now, the reason I bring them up is they have something for everyone's taste. You go in for nourishment, but you come out nourished because some people like steak and some people like chicken, some people like fish, some people like... Right? And so we have to learn in our society, in our culture here in Chicago, as well as other areas as parents or faith-based, we have to learn how do we present information and knowledge in a way that is catered specifically to the individual and their needs and give them choices of how they receive it. Some people like to read, some people like to watch, some people like to hear. And we have to create those type of environments where we sit around the table and we share, and we allow those people who are we're trying to share and help positively grow and develop. We have to make them inclusive of the process so that they can share, not just hear, but they can share and participate in that development. And so as their hand is on the wrench, their hand is turning the screw, they understand exactly how much tension, pressure, to exert so that you don't snap the head of the bolt.
I get you. Yeah, it's been nearly 30 years now since I resided in Chicago. However, the Inglewood community is where many of my teenage years. And when I look at the stories now, it does fed me. And I realized that there are good people there. And I think about how with the process of gentrification in Chicago, it's going on other places in America, but in Chicago, I grew up in a housing project, Washington Park Homes. And when those were torn down to be replaced with condos and things of that nature, even Cabrini Green, you know, those people who spent decades locked away in buildings, basically away in many ways away from the regular many people in Chicago now are let are forced to try to find their way in residential neighborhoods, and I can see clearly how that is impacting some of the crime and the frustration that we see there. And I said that to say that there's great need for those communities, as you alluded to empower themselves with the right, with the necessary tools and knowledge to overcome even those frustrations and those hurdles that they face. So,
well, that's interesting. That's interesting. A part of the issue is oftentimes you don't know what you don't know.
And
so when you go into, leaving a community where housing has a certain style and framework and structure, and that's all you've been exposed to, and you're asking me to get dropped down in another foreign land, whether it be over in Korea or China or Russia or wherever that foreign land, you have to learn how to do things in that area. And so it's based off of your ability to adapt. And then the opportunities that are presented to you. But if no opportunities are presented to you, it's hard to adapt when you're being shut out. It's hard to adapt when you walk in a business and ask for a job and they shut you out simply because you happen to be an African American and you're walking into an area over in Chinatown. It's hard to change when you walk into the area where it's a large Greek population and you're not invited to sit down at a table. So you have to sometimes be welcomed and then, an opportunity extended to you when you're saying, hey, I'm willing to learn. Now, the other side of that is, if I extend you opportunity, you have to show up and you have to work. After you get your paycheck, you have to come back and work the next day.
That's right.
So
that's right.
There are some self monitoring that we have to do and fulfilling our obligations that we agree to. If I agree to a $10 an hour job, then I agree to do the work of a $10 an hour, relationship. But if I agree to a...
I'm playing the devil's advocate. You didn't tell me it was going to be this hot. I didn't know it was going to be this hot. And all you paying me is $10.
Yeah, but you agreed to the $10. Now, you can do something different, and if your abilities are greater than that, then you negotiate what you're able to do, and if you have other skills that's beneficial, then maybe that might be an opportunity. But we all have choice in America, and that choice is we can change and go from one job to another job if we're qualified and can do the work that we agree to by contract.
Right.
But if one man negotiates $10, another man negotiates $15, the person that negotiated the $15 must have had something different or knew something different or had another angle that allowed him or her to get that $15. And so... You have to look at our society allows you to be able to have that type of dialogue.
Mm-hmm,
if I was a relief pitcher today, I may be making $86 million.
What?
Okay. Because the gentleman from Chicago Cubs, our relief pitcher, went back to New York. And his contract now is $86 million for 5 years. Well, he throws the ball at 101, 103 miles an hour. Evidently, New York Yankees said that, we would love to have you. And I'm just a relief pitcher. I come in the eighth inning, ninth inning, tenth inning, and I shut it down. Well, evidently, he negotiated well. But that's the beauty of our society. But you have to have something of value and apply yourself so that those people who have the financial means or those people who have the opportunity, that if it's a job, they are willing to employ you because you're bringing something of value. And that's something in our community that's very important. And so, when you talked about growing up in Washington Park, it is tough to get beyond your four walls. But sometimes, you might get a chance to look over the wall and see that there is greener pasture, and then what is it going to take to get on the other side? That's where the work comes in.
Yeah. And we must not be afraid of the work. I found that part of what we did with our nonprofit here in Nashville is we you know, we forge relationships with various employers and ask them, based on the work we're doing with these young men, to afford them an opportunity to work with them. And, you know, there are a couple of guys who did, they went in and didn't last a whole week. So, you know, we're trying to process them to find out what went wrong, what was the issue. And, frankly, they just were afraid of the potential of being successful at staying there for 6 months to a year in one place and doing something productive. They were afraid of that.
Right, right. Well, go back to your example about the young baby eagle. And once he stretched his wing and he heard his father's voice telling him to spread his wings and fly, he went ahead and did his father share with him because he had the confidence that he was been taught by his father, and he had the ability naturally because he's an eagle, but he had never stretched his wing and never flapped them to fly. And until you know, that instruction was given to him and the confidence of the father saying, you can do this, then oftentimes we don't stretch our wings and we don't fly. And that's a part of us. And how do we build that in individuals? And, you know, that's a very important part of being a human. We have to build and nurture that skill set, and that takes the village. That takes a community. And I think that's why, Dr. Dockery, why what you are doing is so important. You're bringing the issues to the forefront in our community, and this is an excellent way to get the dialogue started, and hopefully we can tie that dialogue with the actions that support the growth that we need in our positive development.
Well, praise God, praise God. Here it is again. Time done ran out on us all. I have enjoyed our conversation. We have a few minutes, about 13 minutes here. Let's squeeze this last little message in here, and we'll wrap it up. Mr. Bloodsaw, you've been a jewel, man. We sure appreciate you. So let's squeeze message in, and we'll kind of bring things to a close here in just a little bit here.
Thank you.
Host, Reverend Reuben Dockery. Thank you for tuning in to Talk Straight on Blog Talk Radio. Here, you can share your thoughts as well as become informed about very important social issues confronting society today. Please take the time to visit my website at bfcinstitute.com. That's BFCINSTITUTE.com to learn more about our efforts to educate, inspire, and empower disadvantaged families across America to improve the quality of life. The best way to stay in the loop of future broadcasts, times, and locations for our traveling educational lecture series and innovative ideas is to become a BFC Institute seminar participant. You may do so by clicking the Join Our Group tab on the homepage. I would be delighted to respond to your suggestions and engage you further in most transformative information. Again, thank you for joining us, and I look forward to hearing from you online.
Talk Straight. You're listening to a very productive dialogue. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. We have with us tonight in studio our good friend, Mr. Gerald Bloodsaw, who's provided us great information, and we hope that others will archive this show and share with your friends and families very, very important information. And I'm happy to identify him as an expert father. And then I say that carefully because I realize there's no
perfect one, but when we can see successful models and best practices, we should certainly embrace them. Also, we have with us our very good friend, Pastor Ricky Wallach, and we appreciate his presence with us as always. There's still a little time. We have about 9 minutes. If you want to ask Mr. Bloodsaw any questions, you can give us a call here at 657-383-0944. Again, that's 657-383-0944. Mr. Bloodsaw, we appreciate everything that you've brought with us. And if you could wrap this up for us and summarize it, how would you do that? Some mother, some father, some man who's not sure about how to be a father, what message would you leave with them tonight?
Well, thank you, and Pastor Wall, I appreciate you being on and hearing about your book, On the Corner. I think that's a fantastic something we can relate to. But wrapping up, and I want to talk about the word relationship. And
okay.
Relationship with your sons, a relationship with your daughters. And so having a relationship is very important. So I'm going to qualify this by saying having a relationship of love and respect are very, very important. If you really build a relationship with your children and you show them love, you show them respect, and you set expectations, then you create an environment where you can do almost anything. So one of my sons is went to school to become a pilot, and he did that in 4 years, and he is now a pilot. He's a certified flight instructor, and he's able to fly a plane with not only one engine but two engines. They call it multi-rated. He's teaching other people how to fly. Now, the reason I bring that up is he shared with me, "Dad, I would like to be a pilot," and he's done this all of his life. And so when we're identifying about 5 or 6 different colleges and universities that had aviation programs, he found some little small school in Iowa that had a great program. And when we were going to another school, we stopped by this school, and I saw it, and we saw the 20 or so planes sitting out there, very first class. And he said, "Dad, this is one of the best schools in the country for aviation. I would like to go here." And so my respect for him was, he identified one of the schools. We did the tours. We made a decision based off of the quality of the institution, what it offered, the safety. And his input was, "I identified this school, and I'd like to go there." I thought he was going to go to a Big Ten school, but he went to this real small school that he was focused. And so that was one of the questions we talked about. The other son is very gifted in mathematics. And so mechanical engineering is his choice of study simply because math is involved in everything. We were talking about knowing the rules of the game and keeping score earlier. Mathematics is tied into everything that we do. For the lady that loves to shop and see the discounts on the prices, guess what? You have to calculate what those discounts are.
Right.
For people who are not that interested in mathematics, if they become a millionaire, they're going to have to learn to count their money pay the people that work for them and pay taxes. And so you talk about things that are relative to people. And so this relationship of love and respect will encompass a lot of things. So that's what I like to leave with you, Dr. Dockery, is you have to have a relationship, and that relationship is based off of love and respect, and you tie it in with knowledge, study, and education. And you end up with a very confident young person.
All right. Wow. Well, Lord willing, we will be in Chicago sometime after the first of the year, and we certainly want you and your family to be there and be a part of it with us, and we'll be in touch with you. That's some very, very powerful and useful information there. We appreciate you. Pastor Waller, we got a few minutes. We got about 5 minutes, so you want to give us a little something to hold on to?
I would love to encourage Pastor Blesso, man. I mean, brother, I think you have enlightened me with great information about the difference between a variety, and you have all kinds of people who are captured out in the world without strength. And you know, you have to be able to tap into, you know, being able to be a witness. What a witness does, you know, a witness can say, okay, I've been there, I've done that, so I understand. And then, you know, someone else on the team may have an area where he can witness over in this area. So when you team up like that, and you're dealing with the variety, man, variety, I mean, you can win with that. That's where the power is in togetherness. And you see it all, man. You know, when you, everything that you were saying since I've been on the broadcast listening, I was just so grateful that, so I didn't want to strip myself from an opportunity to hear all the things that you shared. And I just want to thank you again for your diligence, and congratulations to your son for doing something. You're talking about becoming something that he wasn't, and he must have played with these things, I guess, I don't know, and became that very man that I was when I seen the people on the corner, is what I saw them do and became that. And so it's great to hear that, man, something positive you can tap into and become that. And so that's great, man. I just encourage you to keep doing what you're doing.
Well, thank you. Right. Thank you.
All right. Yes, well, man, time is a monster. He's getting away from us here. Let me, before you leave, invite you, our listening audience, to go to our website, bfcinstitute.com, and hover over the Educational Initiatives tab. And if you will, go look at the traveling lecture, seminar lecture. It's basically a historical seminar on the progression of African-American male hostility. Mr. Bledsoe, we went back to 1865 and identified 119 historical events, or what we call case studies, that help us understand how we got to be where we are by 2015. And we see a lot of that manifesting itself going into 17. So we hope to bring a sociological explanation for how we can frame success for our young men despite their past and despite the circumstances that have brought them to be where they are today. Let me thank again my very special guest, Mr. Gerald Bledsoe, finance representative out of the Chicago area. And God bless you to your family, sir. And your,
well, thank you, and bless your family as well.
Yes, sir. Hope you enjoy the holiday season. Pastor Waller, thank you. And to our audience, we will, all right, sir, we will be back again on the 13th of June. And that show is entitled Generation of Mystification. And we will examine what drives the angry, violent frustration that we hear and see too often in our urban neighborhoods across America, and try to understand how we can fix that. 7 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time. You don't want to miss that. But again, we thank you all for joining us. And until we meet again, you can always go back and archive the show. And until we meet again, we're going to leave with some Stevie Wonder. He's talking about things that are very superstitious. God bless, and we will be in touch.